Hello, my name is Christian Hugill, and welcome to a specially extended edition of the Radio Academy podcast. Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. It's a Scott Mills special.
It's 8:05.
He's Scott Mills, he's Mrs. Lifestyle of the Rich and Famous.
This is the Zoe Board Breakfast Show with Scott Mills in for Zoe till 9, and can I have a cheer, please?
Hey! Hello?
Always getting shirty. Maybe I should talk to him. Hello?
How do I top that? After 24 years, Scott is leaving BBC Radio 1. He starts on Radio 2 later this year, but, and I will be honest with you here, Scott Mills is one of my radio idols. So I wanted to take this opportunity to talk to him all about those years at Radio 1. Expect a few more retro moments along the way, and I promise it doesn't get too emotional. All right, maybe a bit.
It's a weird time at the moment because Radio 1 has been 24 years of my life. That's a long time. And I did do radio before that because I was doing radio since I was 16. So I'd had already a fair share of commercial radio experience. So I do know what it's like on the other side. But like the memories of me not being on Radio 1 are quite hazy now. So yeah, it's a weird, weird change. But you can't be on Radio 1 forever, Christian.
No, you can't. I recently found that out. You're absolutely spot on. What was it as a young DJ, as you say, that 16-year-old, that made you want to go to Radio 1? What was it before you moved there that made you think, that's where I want to be?
Well, for me, growing up, as for lots of people, it was the station that I looked up to. It was obviously the biggest. And as a child, I would listen to it in my bedroom. I'd listen to all the DJs. And it just sounded massive because, you know, I was from the South Coast. So I was sat there in my bedroom in Southampton. And it was from London. And the DJs were famous. And it was like national radio. And something about it really excited me. It had a sound that no other station had for me. It sounded huge. And listening to Radio 1 definitely ignited me wanting to work in radio. But I would say to you, I never thought I would actually get to Radio 1. I was quite a shy kid. So I wasn't one of those people that was like, oh, yeah, I'll definitely be able to do that. But quite the opposite. I was surprised when I managed to get a job at my local station, which was then Ocean and Power in Southampton, covering like the Hampshire area. I was pretty surprised when I got a job there. Then I moved to Bristol for a couple of years to work on GWR, what was then GWR, which was brilliant. Then I moved to Manchester for a couple of years to be on Key 103. And then I moved to London. Some people don't know this or have forgotten. I actually moved to London for the launch of Heart. And I was there 2 or 3 years before getting to Radio 1. So the idea that I would ever be on Radio 1 was not something that crossed my mind. I was quite happy, you know, being in radio. I loved it so much. The fact that I was doing it when I was 16. If someone had told me, oh yeah, one day you'll be on Radio 1, I don't think I would have believed them. It was like saying you're going to be a spaceman or an astronaut. Or it was one of those jobs that just didn't seem possible to me. And I was quite happy, you know, like working around the regions. I made some great friends in Bristol and Manchester. I actually loved those times. But sitting here now, looking back on 24 years of being on Radio 1, if you told me as a kid that I would have actually got there, I would not have believed you.
And when you first got there, you mentioned how much it meant to you. Did you enjoy it, or did you put yourself under a lot of pressure in those early years, of those first years on Radio 1?
I think I did put a lot of pressure on myself If you listen back to really early shows of me.
So, surprise situations, 08700 100 100. If your day, whenever it was, turned out to be something you didn't quite expect, give us a call. 08700 100 100. We'll do some more soon. 18 minutes away. Take that.
I'm not really being me because I'd come from commercial radio at that time in the 90s. Really, the only requirement was to be super tight, get up to the vocal, and do the weather and travel. And then you go to Radio 1 and they say, so what do you want to do in the show? And it's literally a blank piece of A4 paper. And I was not used to that because really, when you're working in commercial radio, outside of breakfast, there's a clock which you stick to and you talk at, let's say, 20 past and 22 and maybe 10 to. So the idea that I could have a show with features and that I could create that with a producer was actually new to me. So I definitely, in the early shows, was not... By the way, when I say the early shows, I'm talking about maybe 4 or 5 years on Radio 1 where I wasn't me. I was a perfectly good kind of jock. You know, I could link all the records together and I could tell you the time and I could tell you that you were listening to Radio 1. But did you get much of me? Probably not. It took me some time, and thank God for Radio 1 allowing me to do this. It took me some time to find kind of my personality because it wasn't really required in the previous radio jobs that I had, you know. And I have to credit Emlyn Dodd, who I started working with on Early Breakfast. Not immediately, by the way. It was about 2 or 3 years in to when I was doing Early Breakfast on Radio 1, which I did for 5 years. And Emlyn and me just clicked. He was my producer. He'd worked there already on various shows. But we just had the same sense of humour. And we would, you know, go to the pub and bounce ideas off each other. Genuine friends. And for me, that turned the corner for my on-air on Radio 1. Emlyn really shaped what you hear now. My kind of on-air personality. He just is a genius. And he produces our Five Live show as well. He runs an independent production company now. But it's been amazing to work with him again because there's no one better. If you come up with a kind of half an idea, Emlyn will make it into the full thing, and he knows how to write for me, and he knows what I can do. He knows how to bring out the best of me on air like nobody else does.
And you have gone on from all that to make so many amazing features. And I think when someone gets to the end of their time on Radio 1, you can usually pick out one or two features. But Scott, I've got a list, okay? Are you ready for this list, right?
Okay, yeah, ready.
Flirt Divert, Oh What's Occurring, One Night with Laura, Scott Cam, Innuendo Bingo, The Florist Game, Becky's Classified, Laura's Diary, Scott Mills the Musical, 24 Years at the Tap End, Real or No Real, Superfan Steve, Badly Bleep TV, Bambaleo Wednesday, Granny Tinder. You have had on your show an unreal list of features.
A lot.
What are the ones that stand out to you?
Right, so I would say... wow, that is a lot, isn't it? I think one of my favourites was One Night with Laura, because that was when Emlyn was producer, who I mentioned. Neil Sloan, who's now at Communicore, was AP, and so was Laura Sayers, now Bussin, who is kind of second in charge at Radio 2. And it was an idea. It was around that time when X Factor was huge. And previously with Laura, we'd done this thing called Laura's Diary, where we read out excerpts from her teenage diary, while her sister did, because she found Laura's old diary in her bedroom at home in Yorkshire. So she would read those out every day at 5:15 when we were on drive time. This is a classic Emlyn idea. And people loved it. I remember at the time seeing the Ray Jars, and we would do it every day at 5:15. I think every day, yeah. And you would see a Popmaster-style spike in the ratings where people would tune in for Laura's Diary.
Sarah has got the biggest spot on her forehead. My skin is quite clear at the moment. Ha ha.
Oh, you cow.
It's such a cow.
Yeah, you
see,
cow.
It's just not changed, has it?
And it was classic teenage diary stuff, you know, things she was embarrassed about, boys she fancied, but it really resonated with listeners. So Mary, her sister, Laura's sister, used to read it out. And a lot of the diary was about, like, you know, she still hasn't found a boyfriend that she likes enough, been let down by boys quite a lot. So from that came One Night with Laura.
One night with Laura, one night with Laura.
That was us touring the UK, X Factor style, doing full-on auditions in a bus. We actually had a bus with One Night with Laura and our faces on it, and we travelled the length of the UK and basically auditioned blokes to be to be her boyfriend. And it was epic, you know. It took over the whole station. These were the really early days, by the way, of, like, or, you know, online content. And at the time, I remember people saying to me, we have never had this many hits on the website. People wanted to know. So really, from what I can remember, those were the first videos that we made for radio. And the website, like, was getting hits like it had never had before because they wanted to see it. That was my first kind of early, what would now be, you know, you'd whack it on Instagram. But at that time, this really was Radio 1's first kind of foray into it. That and Scott Cam, which was basically cameras up in my house, Big Brother style. But once again, unprecedented views on the Radio 1 website. This is before Instagram, before Twitter.
Does the drama never end over at Scott's flat? Yesterday, it was non-stop shenanigans right from the very start when that cheeky scamp Chris Moyles hit two phones in Scott's bedroom and tried to wake him up at the criminally early time of 8:15 in the morning.
Okay, keep ringing, keep ringing.
Now we've got two running at the same time again.
Hi, Scott.
Why would he be ringing us?
Just tell me where the other phone is, it's doing my head in.
But yeah, I think One Night with Laura was my favourite. And in a strange twist, Laura is now married to the person that came fourth in the competition.
There must be some stick there as to only coming fourth, but doesn't that show you the power of a feature that it has shaped her future?
Right, so it's a guy called James who I think he auditioned, I want to say, when we went to Southampton. And I remember Laura, like, looking over at me going, like, put him through to the next round. And the winner of the contest was Gareth, who was a live wire. And we ended up doing, like, a big... The finale was, like, a big date, which we all went to in Disneyland Paris. But it was just that thing of, you know, having those resources and a film crew and a team of people. I'd never really before that worked on anything on that scale. You know, there was a bus that we were traveling around in. It was a proper organization. It was, you know, money was spent, but it was brilliant. And it's the first kind of major thing that I can really remember doing on my show on Drive Time and thinking, wow, you know, this is like, it was on every show. People were obsessed with it.
And as we're mentioning Laura, there has always been, for want of a better term, the sidekicks. There's been Laura, Chappers, Becky, Chris. I just wonder how much you enjoyed forming those individual relationships on the show over the years with, in particular, those four.
All of them really happened organically. They were not kind of placed into the show on purpose. Laura and Becky were APs, assistant producers on the show, and their presence on air was organic, really. And they both ended up being brilliant and hilarious. And with Chappers, Mark Chapman, he's done all right for himself since.
Yeah, he's done all right, hasn't he?
He's done fine, yeah.
That I have ordered a certain electrical appliance from Chopper for my kitchen, right?
You're very angry about this, aren't you?
Well, I am, because I ordered it online because I thought it would be easier for a busy person like myself.
You're non-stop, aren't you?
Yep.
You barely have a spare 2 minutes in the day.
That's right.
Chappers was the afternoon sports reader on Radio 1 on drive time. So I inherited Chappers from Sarah Cox, who did drive time previously. Rather than just him reading the sport, he was around because the sport was every, I don't know, let's say half an hour or every hour, a bit like Newsbeat. So we were like, well, let's utilize him more because he's a funny guy. So Chappers really became co-presenter. And that's the same time that Laura was there. Then Laura moved on to a different show. So then we have Becky, who was the AP on the show. And with Chris Stark, that was slightly different in that I used to DJ a lot at Southampton University because I'm from Southampton. So they used to book me a lot to DJ. And at that time, Chris was the resident DJ at Southampton Uni because he went to the uni. So the reason we became friends is because I was there a lot. I was DJing and he was always on before me. And I would do my set and then we would like grab a beer afterwards. So me and Chris were friends a couple of years really before he was on Radio 1. But he was doing student radio. And I remember thinking there's something. I mean, obviously, we became friends, so like I liked him a lot, like one of my best friends still to this day. But I remember thinking, there's something that he has that we didn't have at that time on Radio 1. And it was, how can I describe it? It was your everyman. It was your boy from Watford, you know, borrowing his mum's car, riding it too fast around the Asda car park in Watford. He had a chain. He liked two-step garage and he was just your average Watford fan lad. And I remember just from being friends with him, his take on things and the way he told a story, I thought was like, we need to capture that on air because we didn't have it. And at first, I can say this now because I'm leaving. At first, the bosses didn't get it at all. I was like, we should try this guy out. And they were like, yeah, don't really understand it. Don't really get it. And I was like, right, we need to give him more of a chance because this guy is funny. The way he tells a story, like the way he sees life is a lot of our young listeners. And the you know, just your average lad from Watford. We didn't really have that. We had a lot of famous DJs on Radio 1, but we didn't have like your everyday bloke. And I just thought that he would be a brilliant add-on to our show. But I'll be honest, it took some time. Me and Emlyn, the producer, had a clear vision of what Chris could be on air, but at the time they didn't really. And then eventually my then controller Ben Cooper was like, actually, yeah, this guy's good. And we kind of brought him on board. Chris was, to start with, was only on like a couple of days a week. And we were in a situation where he was like, look, I'm probably not going to be able to continue to do this if it's just 2 days a week because, you know, I need to be able to pay my bills. So they took the risk and they listened to me and Emlyn, and Ben was brilliant. And was like, well, let's give him a go. And it turned out rather well.
It turned out amazingly well. It's such a wonderful partnership to listen to. I mean, you can tell you're great friends.
Thank you.
And I think that
is
the key to any of those genuine pieces of chemistry.
Yeah, and I mean, you do get a lot of duos on the radio everywhere. But I hope and I think that what makes this one special is the fact that even though we are very different people, it's a genuine friendship from, you know, which has been nearly 15 years, not all of it on air. And I knew that if Chris was given a chance to shine on air, that he would. I just knew it. He just had something about him. He had that thing, which is hard to quantify, but I knew that he would be a star.
As you say, Scott, 24 years is a long time to be on Radio 1. What do you think is the key to longevity on youth radio, on stations like Radio 1?
I think it's a mixture of some people in at Radio 1 and elsewhere would sometimes call me like a chameleon. It's being able to change with the times a little bit and being prepared to freshen up your act or your presenting to go with those times. If you listen to, like I said, the early shows that I did on Radio 1, they're very different to now. I think you've got to love pop culture and you've got to be interested in it. And by the way, that moves so much faster now than it did when I joined Radio 1 because of social media. You've got to be able to keep up with it. And I think I've managed to do that because I actually soak it all up. I love it. I think there's a danger that maybe when you get older, your brain doesn't work like that anymore. And you're like, well, I don't really care what Justin Bieber had for dinner. But I still do. and that's what I think is part of it. You've got to also keep up with the music and know what's going on a station like Radio 1. Because if you think I've been there 24 years, so many different genres of music have come and gone. Like if there'd be times where rock was the thing, or UK garage was massive for a while, and then pop really came back, and I kind of rode all of those, God knows how, but I did. And I think you have to have a genuine interest in the music, and you really have to not get left behind in pop culture. And I'm not going to name them, but I spoke to another DJ that used to be on Radio 1 a while back, and they were like, yeah, I didn't want to keep up with it. I wasn't interested in it anymore because I was in my 40s and I didn't really care about pop culture anymore. And I still do to this day. And I don't think that will go, really. I think it's been ingrained in me for so long that I doubt. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it will happen when I go to Radio 2 and I don't know any new music. but I've had to know about it for so long that it's kind of just in my brain. I soak it up like a sponge, you know? And I actually enjoy it. And I like to think that I know, like, what's going on. If you think about it, in the time that I've been at Radio 1, I think you could email the station. I don't think you could text. There was no WhatsApp. There was no social media. There wasn't even Facebook, I don't think. The chart was still buying CDs. And then it was the download chart. And then it went to streaming. I've lived through a lot. I found a brilliant clip the other day of me doing the chart in 2004.
This is the official chart show
with Scott Mills
on Radio 1.
It's 4 o'clock and this is the official chart show live across the UK. I'm Scott, and for the next 3 hours on Radio 1, I'll be counting down the top 40 singles, the top 20 albums, and the biggest DVDs.
Radio 1.
We're going to be talking to Jamelia. She'll be giving away her superstar collection of tunes, along with a very cool CD and MP3 player.
and the DVD chart.
Scott, I'm giving you an open goal here. The DVD chart.
And then a brand new CD player.
All the big prizes. Right.
God, so a lot's happened. And then obviously Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. But I think it's because I love pop culture and I thrive on knowing what young people like. I think that's, I think it's not being afraid to adapt to whatever time it is.
The emotions of leaving must be high. What are your emotions?
My emotions are a bit of denial. I'm not going to lie. I am going on holiday directly after Radio 1 finishes because I thought that was a good idea just to get away from everything. And then I'll have a couple of months to regroup and start the next chapter. But I do feel sad. It's going to be odd to not be on Radio 1 because it's been such a long time. And I love Chris. I love working with Chris. So that's going to be separately emotional and as emotional as me. I mean, obviously, we're still friends, but, you know, it also signals the end of us working together, which I am emotional about. Because, yeah, I can't really remember a time when I wasn't on Radio 1 very clearly. So I think it's going to hit me quite hard. So I'm glad that I'm kind of going away and taking a little break for a while. I'm excited for what's next, though. But I do feel like I've come to the end and closing a really, really big, good book.
Scott, I feel very fortunate to talk to you today, not just as the presenter of this podcast and not as someone who was lucky enough to work alongside you, but most importantly, as someone that has listened to you for a very long time. I know your show personally helped me laugh at a time in my life when sometimes it didn't feel like there was a lot to laugh about, maybe.
Oh, thank you.
So I can't imagine the number of similar stories there are out there, literally millions. So on behalf of a generation of Radio 1 listeners, thank you.
That is so sweet. Thank you so much. I'm getting a lot, as you said, of, you know, of DMs and emails at the moment. And it's quite a lot to take in because, I don't know, I'm not... I'm actually quite a shy person, really, and the idea that I've impacted people as much as these messages say that I have, I find quite mind-blowing that it's meant so much to so many people. I mean, some of the messages I get are off the scale amazing, like the loveliest, loveliest things. Because, as we know, radio is so personal. It's such a personal medium, way more than television. Generally, mostly you're listening to it solo. So you're not really listening. It's rare to be listening to the radio in, you know, large groups of people or even really with the family. You know, you don't, it's not like the 50s where the family gathers around the radio. It's a pretty solitary experience. So you do build up that routine and that relationship with the presenter. And obviously I know that, but when you're doing it every day, you don't immediately always think that. But the messages I'm getting and the lovely words you just said have really brought it home to me of like, wow, this has meant, this is soundtracked, like me, I have soundtracked a lot of people's lives, you know, people in that time have got married, divorced, had kids, you know, been in and out of love, got jobs, you know, been through uni. It's, you just forget when it's you, how long it's been and how much, what I'm really noticing and getting is how much it's meant to a lot of people, and I feel absolutely humbled by it.
You deserve those messages more than anyone. I can assure you of that. There is only one way I can end this interview, though, Scott.
Yeah.
Love you, bye.
Love you, bye.
The term legend is overused, but it is fully justified in the case of Mr. Scott Mills. I used to work on Newsbeat at Radio 1, and I used to get asked all the time, what's Scott Mills like? I promise you, he is just as lovely as he sounds on the radio. Scott's last show on Radio 1 is on August the 25th. If you miss it, you can find it on BBC Sounds. We are back next week when we're finding out how to make radio, not just for a county or a country, but for the whole world. I look forward to talking to you then. Bye for now.